Okay, I have a story for you guys. So, I seriously thought I saw Elton John today.
Did you not?
No. I thought, you know, wow, Elton John, holy shit, that person really looks like Elton John. Oh my god, Elton John drives a Mini Cooper. And then I realized it was just an old lady with a really unfortunate face.
Damn Art Majors. This is episode 30. The big 3-0. I didn't realize it was 30. I didn't do anything special.
It's all downhill.
It's all downhill from here, yeah. Or up. Depending.
So I guess we should probably start this the way we start all of our episodes with what you're drinking. Aaron.
I'm drinking a beer that's celebrating over 140 years. Of being the shit, and it's Coors Banquet.
You're right back to your old time favorite, aren't you?
Yes.
Coors is if you just want beer, just beer, the generic sort of beer. Go Coors.
Yeah. Beers.
Beers.
I am nursing a Blue Moon Harvest Pumpkin Ale.
How's that working out for you?
Well, let me tell you. Nipple on that thing.
Yeah, right. Let me tell you. This is probably my third pumpkin beer of the season. I've had Aviator and I've had Big Boss, thanks to Aaron. This is probably my least favorite, but probably the least pumpkin-y, so it's kind of smoother to drink. It's all right. It's not anything to write home about, but if you're just experimenting with pumpkin beers, it's not that bad. There you go.
Very nice. Got? I have, it was a runner-up in our beer competition. I have the Founder's Curmudgeon Old Ale brewed with molasses and oak aged.
It left an impression on you, did it?
I didn't know it had molasses in it. That explains why I thought it tasted like cough syrup.
That would explain it, yeah.
Anyway. When I found it, I only was able to find it in a 4-pack, so I had one sitting in the back of my fridge that I didn't realize was there.
What's the alcohol content?
The alcohol, 9.8%.
That's what.
Yeah. So, 4-0 will get you done.
It'll get you drunk.
So, news. Let's see. Iron Pour, Liberty Arts, October 11th. Mentioned that last week and the week before.
If you're not at Liberty Arts by now, you need to fucking get there. We're done talking about it. Damn.
We should do a pod from Liberty Arts while people are working in the background.
We can. This shit's portable. We can do that.
Basically, it would just be us trying to talk over people using grinders.
Commentating anyway. Very quietly, like, here he goes with the flagel. Good form. Good form.
Yes. Oh, see how he's taking the grinder in at that nice angle?
Very good. Excellent. Very good.
Anyway, so Liberty Arts Iron Pour, October 11th. Let's see, the Hysop Yoon Material World, that's up till October 3rd. That is at the Haynes Art Center at UNC. Also, the Miro, the Experience of Seeing show is still up at the National Museum of Art. That's on the Duke campus. That one costs money, $12 for adults. $8 for non-Duke students with ID. If you're a Duke student, it's probably even cheaper. Maybe even free. Probably free. But that's up until February 22nd, 2015. So you have tons of time to go see that and no excuse not to.
November, we got NC Comic Con in Durham.
Durham!
Oh shit, I forgot about that.
Advance tickets are on sale. I don't know why I'm saying this yet. We need to reach out to them and see if we could record from there.
Yes.
But Miss Fiona Staples of the Saga series from Image Comics will be there. She's kind of one of the headliners. I am hoping we can land us an interview. I know I am a big fan of that series. Your lady friend is also, after I turned her onto it.
I can totally just sit there and ask her random questions that have nothing to do with anything she does.
What's your favorite kind of steak? Yeah, why not?
Maybe I'll freeze up again and just ask them what their favorite inanimate object is to draw.
Very cool. Very cool. Very cool.
Very cool. I had to edit out 25 very cools from that pod. I'm sorry.
Very cool.
Look, we got a couple of months. I'm going to work on a new default, you know.
No, what you need to do is you need a script of six.
Right.
You need six, like, awesome. Excellent.
Well, here.
Tell me more.
On this show, very I say, cool. Right. I say, sure. And I say, right on. Very rarely do I say very cool on this show.
True, that is true.
It's a very no big two show where I say very cool.
Yeah.
You just change it to noises.
Just... See, I just cut people off like an asshole, like I did right there.
You totally did. That was awesome. It was very cool.
Oh man.
Right on.
Anyway, that's the other thing I do. I just jump in there with anyway.
Sure.
Yep. It's because you're louder than everybody else.
Yeah, it is.
Fucking foghorn.
I say, boy.
You done? Centerfest is also coming up.
What is Centerfest?
Centerfest is a giant art show in Durham. And I think it's a collaboration from several art facilities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
mm-hmm.
not sure. I haven't looked into it entirely yet, but it is coming up soon.
Yep.
I think they have over 170 artists represented.
Oh, wow.
It's a big deal.
Anyway. All right. So, folks, guess what?
Hey, wait. Real quick. I want to... Shout out to our Greenville folk, you know, our brethren, our art people. If there's something you guys want us to talk about, you know, events coming up, shows coming up, let us know. Also, I know we talked about maybe even going out to Greenville in a future show and spend some time with you guys. Anybody who can set us up with, you know, some of the details of location and... hit us up. Let us know.
And it needs to be like...
I think Dam needs a field trip. I think it's been a while since we've had a field trip.
And it needs to be like a couple weeks out. Cause
yeah, no, we can't just like stop everything we're doing.
We can't do spur of the moment anymore because we've become lame. But that's okay because I go on to Craigslist where I can feel better about myself. But
is that why you go? To feel better about yourself?
But no, I'm
there
already...
are other ways.
I'm already awesome. But it just reminds me. No. So I've gone on the road. I've traveled without traveling.
Mm-hmm.
I have gone to Craigslist and I have selected a city not quite at random. It was very specific. I went to Portland, Oregon. Because things are weird there. I figured I'm going to find some good things there. And folks, if you'd like me to read or find or see what I can dig up in another city on Craigslist for the misconnections and... please feel free to write it in. Maybe a city you grew up. Maybe a place you lost someone. Maybe a place you found someone. I don't know. I don't really care. But just suggest cities, and I'll go there, find some misconnections, maybe some good ones, and I'll even read them here on the air, and you'll have my gratitude.
How would they suggest them to you?
They can do it on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
They can do it on the Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They can write it in an email.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they can take a picture and tag us. They can take a picture of the sign, of the place, tag us in the picture on Twitter.
All of which, if you need handles, it's surprisingly Damn Art Majors. We locked that shit down.
You could also send him a letter. Here's his address and his social security number.
And his blood type.
O negative.
Positive?
Positive. Nice. It's negative.
All right, so Craigslist.
So I went to Portland, Oregon to see what I could find. And my first selection was at the Fred Meyer paint section. This is a man for a woman around the age of 30.
What is it, Fred? Say again?
Fred Meyer. I believe it's like a hardware store or something, or maybe a paint store.
Was that the title?
This is how they title the... They were at a Fred Meyer in the paint section.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
All right, this is a man for a woman. God, get your Craigslist format down.
Let's go. What is
anyway, so man for a woman, 30 years age. I was picking your spirit color as paint. A coral. Our interaction was convivial. That's it. Very short, very sweet. Beautiful, actually.
Yeah, that person.
I was picking your spirit color.
As paint.
As paint.
A coral.
Yeah, they have a closet full of skins.
Gutters, what is your spirit color?
My spirit color?
Mauve? Would you say mauve?
I'd probably have to just say, I don't know, green?
That's really uncreative.
I'm sorry. If you look at any of my work, you'll see that me and color don't get along very well.
What's the next one you got?
Picking Your Nose in a Silver Hatchback, Woman for Man, East on Morrison Bridge at 6 p.m. You're so cute that I was willing to ignore the fact that you were, indeed, digging for nose gold. You looked at me, looking at you, and, well, sparks flew from my tiny car to your tiny car as you realized you'd been caught. Mutual giggling ensued. And quite frankly, it was kind of adorable. It's cool. Everybody picks their nose sometimes. But it's not every day that your nose picking earns this much.
Closet full of boogers.
I bet she wishes she was a booger and he would pick her.
Mm. That sounds like a Valentine's Day waiting to happen.
Very nice. And then last year we have a... before I go on to my haiku, which I always have a haiku, sure. Of course. We have Girl at Vancouver Library Bus Stop. Man for Woman. Hello. I seen this really cute girl at the Vancouver Library Bus Stop a few months ago. She had tattoos of weed on both her legs, like the leaf and the weed plant. I am 420 friendly. And if you find this, hon, please email me. I would love to hear from you.
That's probably a 12-year-old.
Probably. Anyway, Craigslist doesn't discriminate.
I mean, why would you post that 2 months after the fact?
No idea.
It's Craigslist, man. There's no rhyme or reason.
So, there's not. For our haiku.
That infuriates me.
Which is actually not a haiku. Let's just call it like short slam poetry because apparently no one on Craigslist knows about the 575 rule for haiku.
We don't have bongos.
Thank you. This is, the title of this is Lo-Fi, posted by JMPW. Pimply kids, keep pimp hands strong.
Nice.
And that concludes our journey to Portland. Miss Connections. Thank you. Dutters out. Which brings us to the round table on a square table.
Man. I'm not ready to do this right now. You just, like, killed my brain entirely.
Hey, Dutters, you hear China discovered the color purple. How do you feel?
They discovered the color purple back in 1045 to 771 BCE.
Right. It's breaking
And later
news.
In the 220 AD.
All right, shut up.
By the Zoro and Han. It looks like I wrote Zoro, but I think it's actually some other period. And then the Han Dynasty. They shot first.
Alright, so...
Bravo!
So as this roundtable discussion was just completely summarized by Adam and Richard, let's move on. Now this roundtable discussion is about a subject that I discovered recently called Chinese purple. It's also known as Han purple from the Han Dynasty. Chinese purple is a unique pigment that was used to paint some of the clothing of the high-ranking of officers of the 8,000 Chinese terracotta warriors that were buried underground. Everybody knows about the terracotta warriors. They might not know that they were painted. They were. They were painted extremely vibrantly, actually. But to restate that really awkward sentence that I just said, all of the high-ranking officers were painted with this specific color, their clothing.
The terracotta warriors, not the actual officers themselves.
God damn it.
So think of this. 200 stone hardened Asian fabulously painted vibrant peacocky soldiers standing at your door. What do you do? What do you do with that?
This has literally nothing to do with this topic. And you give me crap.
We're just going
to
start this over. So this round... this roundtable discussion is about a subject I found out about recently called Chinese purple, also known as Han purple from the Han Dynasty. Stop laughing. if Adam has edited this,
this is the second time
we've tried to start this. Chinese purple is a unique pigment that was used to paint some of the clothing of the high-ranking officers of the 8,000 Chinese terracotta warriors. Everybody knows about the terracotta warriors. They might not know that they were painted. They were painted, and they were painted very, very vibrantly. Oh my god!
I like how because of your you're repeating yourself, our viewers now realize how well prepared you are.
Yeah.
Because you have a script. None of us have a script. You are like
I wasn't even reading that time.
Really?
That was like short
nice,
memory.
Very nice. Well done.
Keep going.
However, I'm very distracted, and I've only had one damn beer. It's an interesting subject for archaeologists because the color purple, especially purple pigments, were not found in ancient artifacts, especially from 700 BC when they estimate this was, or the Terracotta Warriors were created. In the ancient world, purple pigments were not manufactured simply because they didn't exist. They're not naturally occurring in the Earth's soil.
Right.
Yeah. The closest thing would be blue, and that has to be mined. It wasn't mined until many centuries after 700 BC. Glad you did.
I did.
Yeah. Did it feel good?
Hey, I just want to address the fact that you fuckers think I don't read the shit you send me. I read it. I just don't retain all of it.
I believe you.
I never said, I never doubted you.
All right. Thank you. I read.
I think we all read.
I can't read. I'm actually illiterate. A close analysis of the composition of Chinese purple showed that it is composed of barium, quartz, copper minerals, and lead salt, which implicates that Chinese artisans back in 700 BC were performing synthetic inorganic chemistry 2,700 years ago, which is insane. Like, alchemy, which is basically this, didn't happen until, what, the Middle Ages? You know, they were hiring monks and priests and weird scientists to try to make gold out of random stuff. Yeah. Okay. But the mystery doesn't stop there. There are no written records regarding the production of Han purple, but experts have blasted the pigment with various x-rays, negative 270 degrees Celsius temperatures, beams of electrons have been that travel faster than the speed of light have been blasted at this compound, and it's been subjected to the world's most powerful magnet. What the experts found was that the lead salt must have been added to a molten glass mixture when the Chinese artisans were tasked with the necessity to try to make synthetic jade. That's an awkward sentence, I understand. Back in 700 BC, jade, everybody knows jade the color, jade the substance was a special stone material that was very translucent, that had a very pale green color. But it was so rare and so special to the Chinese back then that they actually directly associated it with immortality. So anybody
it was that gold.
It was that gold. It was actually more expensive than gold, probably. Because only the royal and the very, very rich were able to possess this stuff. In fact, they were buried with it. So as much jade as was collected and produced, carved, and all that, as much of it disappeared when people died. So they hired all these Chinese artisans, or forced them to do this, to try to create synthetic jade. How they did that was by working with molten glass. So in ancient China, they would have added lead to the mix of molten glass, and they would have intended it to act as a flux, which is a flux is something that cleans impurities out of any molten material, usually metal or glass, which it would have done if they added it. But in this case, if the molten glass is maintained at a very specific temperature for a certain amount of time, the lead salt is capable of catalytically breaking down the barium that's in there, and it enables this pigment to form, the Chinese purple pigment. Back in those times, these artisans probably had no idea why it was doing this, and they, you know, never would have had a recollection or any sense of why it was doing that.
Witchcraft.
Yeah, they probably would have thought that it was some sort of, you know, cosmic gift or something. However, they were able to take this occurrence out of the molten glass and then crush it up and create paint out of it. But for nearly 1,000 years, Chinese purple was used in the highest quality items, and it was the color of the elite. Like when you think about, was it French royalty that wears the blue? Is it German? I can't remember. Anyway, when you think about royal colors, the Chinese did it first.
Purple and gold.
Purple and gold. But
so I'm not familiar. Was that a reference?
So for around 1,000 years, this pigment existed. It was very difficult to make and
not very stable.
No. But around 200 AD, both it and the recipe for it disappeared entirely for ever. Until
let me give you a clue.
What?
Red, blue.
Nice try.
Got you covered. Purple.
Yep. I think it was one of the.
But they actually used it in their glass too.
Yeah, I think one of the emperors had this obsession with suppressing knowledge and scientific ventures, and I think that's why the recipe disappeared. I couldn't find a direct correlation that would corroborate that, but anyway, it showed back up in the 1980s. They found the Terracotta Warriors then? I don't remember when they found them.
I want to say it was actually in the 90s. At least I remember reading about it in the 90s in like Scholastic magazine.
Yeah, there was a lot of buzz about
this. I don't know how up to date Scholastic magazine is. I don't know if it's a timely periodical or not.
Zoo books.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, it was rediscovered in the 1980s. And its strange properties were studied for yet another 24 years until M. Night Shyamalan threw another twist into the plot. When it was discovered that if the pigment were highly magnetized and dropped to almost absolute zero, which is, I think, negative 273 degrees Celsius, it would obtain a very rare quantum physical state called the Bose-Einstein compensate. Holy shit. they continued dropping the temperature, and what they discovered was that the magnetic waves they were observing lost a dimension. I know that makes no sense to anybody, but picture this. Picture an XYZ axis graph. You've got X, Y,
we're picturing Z. It.
So it's in three dimensions. Picture in there are waves that are bouncing up and down all throughout each axis. That is the magnetic waves that are occurring in this 3D space.
It's really coming to life for me now.
I'm glad. When this thing is dropped to the specific temperature and magnetized, all of the waves flatten into a 2D shape.
What is that shape?
They maintain that shape.
What is that shape?
The color purple?
What is that shape?
What they call it is, they say it looks like the surface of water. Like it's very slightly undulating. It's not really like bouncing up and down.
That's not a shape.
Anyway, what that signifies, it began behaving similarly to how water would act if it were being displayed through these magnetic waves. Long story short, scientists basically shit their pants because what this signified was that thermal motion, which was not believed to be possible when that close to... You guys are just looking at me like, what the fuck?
Okay. They also... apparently, they shit their pants and they discovered the brown note.
Oh my god!
Color purple and the brown note?
You want us to envision this fucking graph? Now I got all these guys in lab coats fucking defecating themselves.
So you pictured the graph.
Cheap pit pants! Strong!
Now picture this. Absolute zero, the temperature, is...
really cold.
It's really cold. It's a signifier where all material, all known material... stops operating.
Stops moving.
Yeah, stops moving with a thermal... what the fuck?
What is your point?
Long story short, anyway, scientists shit their... Oh my god, you've literally write this shit out!
This is tough to understand, dude. It's like fucking... it's quantum physics.
For those of you that don't know what quantum physics are, I recommend going to your nearest library and going into the Quantum Physics for Dummies.
Anyway, thermal motion is any object or material that moves normally. Quantum motion is what occurs when materials reach the temperature absolute zero. Because it is impossible for thermal motion to occur at absolute zero.
So basically, any motion that is occurring is happening on an, like the purest level of motion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is not being influenced by temperature.
Yeah.
It is purely the atoms and electrons moving only.
It essentially kills it, regardless of what material it is. It is immobile.
It's frozen. It
cannot do anything, cannot change into a solid or a liquid, nothing.
It is stuck.
Yeah. What this means is that the unique physical arrangement of the molecules in Chinese purple makes it possible for the material to enter a quantum state, which in turn means potential advances on a massive scale for stuff like superconductor development, quantum computing, and locomotive transportation, because this composition does not abide by the same laws as others.
How the fuck did we get from purple to locomotive transportation?
That way. This way, I'm going to explain it. What they're saying,
I just went to Portland, so I mean... So yeah.
Dude, congratulations. You have officially made me miss spider facts. I never thought it would happen.
It's a difficult subject to understand. I get it. So, the reason why we're talking about locomotive transportation is because the color purple... Chinese purple, the substance, is a pigment. You can use it to paint things, and they're saying that if you were to coat objects in Chinese purple and subject them to certain criteria, they would be capable of quantum motion.
A quantum leap, if you will?
Minus Scott Bakula, yes. Anyway, there's been a lot of talk about quantum computing, which would enable practically uniqueness of human thought for computers.
Basically not just on and off switches.
Yes. So Chinese purple went from being a synthetic pigment that was just remarkable for its time, created without necessity, created by accident, to becoming one of the most interesting substances known to man at this moment in time. Like, people still do not understand what makes it tick. They've studied and studied and studied the specific composition of just simple four minerals, and they can't wrap their heads around why it acts this way. I think it's an awesome subject. And I was going to make a joke earlier about not going to rent the movie The Color Purple, because it's not about quantum theory at all.
And then you realize no one at this table has seen that movie.
No.
I've seen that movie.
Have you?
Yeah.
You read the book?
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's an excellent documentary about the Terracotta Warriors on Netflix right now, and they do talk about Chinese purple in that documentary.
Speaking of documentaries on Netflix, I watched that documentary about making the Pharaoh's chariot.
Mm-hmm.
You were not kidding about their lack of OSHA policies.
Yeah.
Like, the guy sitting on the end of this mill to basically balance a board as it was being resawn into lumber.
By a 15-foot bandsaw with no guard.
Did we talk about that on the show?
No, I think we were talking
about it.
We were just talking about it, but... For any of you out there who enjoy watching sort of a hands-on documentary, it shows the people actually making things, which is the kind of documentaries I enjoy. I don't need just a bunch of lab coats sitting around talking about stuff. I want to see them building something. And they actually built something in this documentary. They built a chariot, and it was cool. Awesome technology. Facts. Science. But more importantly, a bunch of guys smoking cigarettes in the Middle East building things.
Yeah,
a lot of cigarettes.
The most impressive thing about that documentary is... with modern technology, they weren't able to recreate certain aspects of the chariot.
They actually had a really difficult time getting the steam-bent wood to cooperate, which I found interesting.
And it still broke even after they got it to cooperate.
Yeah, and so that means at the time, which honestly, the only thing I can think is the ancients they figured it out, and then they assembly lined it, and they would probably steam-bend the wood for a lot longer. Because these guys were giving it, 12 hours in a steam bender or something?
Yeah, they were on a deadline, but still, I mean...
Yeah. I mean, our convenience of our technology allows us to get steam really rapidly, control exactly where it is, because they welded up a giant steam chamber.
Yeah, they were able to focus it.
The Egyptians would not have welded up a giant steam chamber. They probably would have built some mud terracotta hut thing and shoved a bunch of wood into it and filled it with water, and they probably would have had, like a hut, we're all sitting around in towels, dumping steam, dumping water on some coals while the wood is just lining up around them.
Right on.
Fascinating. Yeah. Ancients.
What was the name of this documentary?
The Pharaoh's Chariot.
Building the Pharaoh's Chariot. It's also on the PBS, app on the Roku.
There you go. I wonder if it's on Amazon or Hulu.
Probably.
It's on Netflix.
It's a Nova. It's a Nova thing. Yeah.
Right on.
There is a couple of really twatty British guys in it, but just ignore those guys.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. I think the main reason I watch documentaries is to watch someone build something. Like, if it involves rebuilding an ancient technology, I find that fascinating.
Right.
I'd rather just read an article about something like, say, this color purple thing. I'd rather just read about Han Purple than watch some English guy talk about Han Purple.
So you should watch the documentary about the Terracotta Warriors, because they both rebuild the Terracotta Warriors and the Chinese Purple.
See? They're talking about rebuilding. I'm all about it. But anyway, yeah. So,
is that about it? Are we wrapping up for the...
Well, did you want to do a look into the mind that is Adam Buccafusco, pronounced Smith?
Sure.
Where we ask some questions. Why podcasts? Does he really look this good all the time? And how does he deal with those tricky, hard-to-reach places? And is it very cool?
6 fingers in his right hand. That's how.
I have 5. Now, how many toes do I have?
12.
Give or take.
You're like one of those cats that has all the weird...
But Adam,
yeah.
On a serious note, why podcasts?
Where did this whole thing come
from? Where did this come from? I feel like we might have answered where this podcast came from. It was just us sitting around. But you have a love for podcasts. Not just ours, but any podcast, all right, really.
Well, here's the thing. It came from two different people, two different times in two different years. One was, if you go back a couple episodes, we had a special guest, Chris, on the air. And in college, Aaron and our ladies of that time would meet at Chris's place and
just call me a lady?
No, our ladies. Oh. would meet up
we
at
were
Chris's
ladies
place
at that time.
We'd hang out on the porch. And we would just have like hour-long conversations, you know, over cases of beer and packs of cigarettes.
Talk about purses and flip-flops.
And various movies and video games. And, you know, Chris actually was the one who said, you know, we should really record this. Like, this is good stuff. And I think, you know, if channeled, people would like to listen. And that never really left my mind, especially when I thought it was easy enough. Cut to a couple years later, I had a coworker who was listening to podcasts, and she was like, why don't you listen? You can learn a lot. You know, this is a whole new world here. And I was, you know, after working at Hot Topic for a while, I got really burnt out on music, especially in the workplace. So I tried out a podcast from Kevin Smith and the Smodcast, and later on Nerdist and various other networks.
You might also know Kevin Smith from such roles as Silent Bob and Silent Bob.
No, he's played other roles.
And large fat man in hockey jersey.
I was going to say the only man that wears a 4X.
Right. And so...
I'm sure goalies wear a 4X, but they've got pads.
There you go. Nah. So yeah, that's kind of where it came from. You know, just listening to Smodcast and Nerdist and kind of getting the idea of, like, you know, I thought back to those conversations we had with Chris and said, you know, we could do this. Like, the startup's pretty inexpensive, and it's just, you know, just see what happens. One of the rules I always had, especially for this podcast, is that us three in particular have always been friends. We've been friends for many years. And I always said, if the podcast gets in the way of that friendship, like, I'll kill it right then and there. Like, because that's, you know, what you guys mean to me. I love this show.
If we do kill the podcast, we will ceremoniously take the bell outside and shoot it. We might just do that because they might just take it from me and shoot it.
So there you go. Podcast.
Interesting.
I hope you guys are enjoying it. I'm glad you guys are a part of it.
I enjoy it. Aaron, do you have a question for Mr. Smith?
How do you look so good all the time?
I don't know. I saw that written down. I didn't. Maybe it's Maybelline. I don't know. Do I look good all
really?
The time?
I thought you were born with it.
No. Barely.
Well played.
I don't know. You kind of threw this one in my lap. I don't know what to say.
It was on the outline.
Can I interview myself? I'm really good at interviews.
It says specifically, interview Adam if you'd like. I was not intending to. Not this episode.
Very nice. Very nice.
Oh, shit.
What is your ideal meal?
Meal.
Meal. Like a meal. All
right,
like,
well,
not like a four course.
Well,
like
here's the thing.
Meal.
I always said that if I was stranded on a desert island and could only eat two types of food for the rest of my life, Italian and Japanese. So, like, if we could find a way to combine spaghetti and sushi and not make it disgusting, that would be awesome.
A rice noodle.
Adam, what was the first thing that you drew that you were proud of? And what was the most recent thing that you drew that you were not proud of, and how do they compare?
Oh, I actually know the answer to this. In third grade, I drew a picture of a kitten that was sitting in a dog dish eating the dog's food. The overbearing dog was staring at the kitten going, like, what are you doing? And it was a realistic drawing. It was not a cartoon. It was actually, like, and it was on tone paper. I showed it to my third grade teacher, who looked at it and said, that's really nice. Where did you find it? And I said, well, I drew it, and she refused to believe me. And
now she's burning in hell.
No, she was a good teacher. Her name was Miss Marino. And so, like, you know,
Dan Marino's wife.
Exactly.
Who wants to go deep?
I actually had that drawing up in my bedroom up until the point that we moved from Florida to North Carolina, where I just kind of, like, was a big, like, time to split up kind of phase for me. Recently, what have I drawn that I'm not particularly proud? I don't know, man. I just sketch all the fucking time. Some things just go to the wastebasket.
Okay, what thing did you draw that you sat on for a couple days and then realized, wow, that really sucks and I'm mad at myself for it?
Okay, well, and this is actually currently on my website, so maybe I might take it down. The last thing that I kind of did that was more than, like, a doodle was this drawing of a robot holding, like, this space hamster thing. It was just kind of like a, you know, mechanic thing investigating an organic thing.
Uh-huh.
And it was using its big cycloptic eye to scan the specimen.
Very cool.
I think I saw that.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily thrilled with it, but I mean, I enjoyed doing it at the time. It did end up on my website. I may take it down. I don't know. I realize I draw a lot of robots, and I draw a lot of the same scenario of artificial life trying to understand life.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that's an introspective look at you trying to understand life?
I would say
no.
He's the dog, and life is the kitten.
Yes.
Don't answer for him.
Yeah, I don't think there's really a rhyme or reason. I just like to draw geometric shapes and kind of build off them and see where they go. And obviously robots are really easy to build off of from geometric shapes. So I do like to play with the idea of mechanic versus organic in my work. Balls.
Nice. Very nice.
Very nice. Yeah.
Trying to think if I can come up with another question for you.
I don't know. Shit. I'm pretty much an open book. I don't know. You know, we were talking about, like, the idea that this pod, coupled with No Big Two Comic Review, could one day become a network where we can have a flagship and
where do you see this
shows
beyond that? Like, beyond the flagship dam, like,
I don't know, man.
Would you like to be a, I guess the producer's not the right term, like the owner of a label? I don't know what you call it.
I don't,
like,
know. Here's
mogul?
The problem. The problem I'm having right now is that
Dr. Dre, P. Diddy.
No, here's the thing. Like, I have a crap load of ideas, and in fact, you know, even you had an idea that inspired me, and I took your idea and I ran with it. I'm not going to go into detail about it, but I presented it to some people who looked at it and said, these are doable things, but, like, this is something, like, a company does. This isn't something, like, an individual does. I have a crap load of ideas. And the problem is, I don't necessarily have the time in the day to devote to these ideas, to turn them into things all the time. I don't have the finances.
So what you're saying is you need a reasonably attractive elderly woman with huge bags of cash to bequeath them all to you upon her death.
Sugar mama.
If I had an unlimited amount of time and an unlimited amount of budget, nothing would ever get done because I would be always chasing the next big idea.
See, I have a belief that it's really just the money, because you can always find the time.
Sure. Well, the thing is, like, so I have all these ideas. I don't have, like I said, money and time, and, you know, I have to work, and I got to make a paycheck, and, you know, this podcast is one of those things that I said, well, this is an idea that is tangible. It's not highly expensive, and it's exciting, and it's something that is easily done, and I don't have to ask anybody's permission. I don't have to fucking make a business proposal. I don't have to go to a bank and get a business loan. Let's fucking do it. You know, I don't have to max out a credit card. Let's fucking do it. And so for me, it's about balancing all the great ideas and choosing the ones that are feasible and exciting. Because just because something's feasible and you can do it doesn't mean it necessarily excites you.
Very true.
So, yeah. With that being said, I may not actually have that store that I really want to open next year. I may not actually have the network and, you know, that I'd like come next year. That's a goal. It's a goal to have a network next year where we can kind of showcase some new shows, some new talent. And, you know, some sponsorship and stuff. I think that's a realistic goal.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately...
I mean, I would say that we all have our own personal goals. You're definitely the reason we do this podcast. I mean, you're the one that sat down and was like, all right, you two guys, we're recording. And then it just kind of...
Yeah, I don't even remember thinking about it so much as even having a choice in the matter. I mean, it may sound weird, but you just...
threw a mic in your face and said,
"Get no, talking." I remember there was the one night it was the three of us and Chris was there too.
Yeah.
And you said, "So I've been thinking about a podcast, because we get together and we shoot the shit all the time. Why not record it? Someone will listen."
Right.
And I feel like I think that's pretty much what you said. Maybe some very cools thrown in there.
Very cool.
It was like maybe like 2 weeks after that, you had grabbed some equipment, thrown it together, and sat us all in your tiny bedroom and had us all sweating together.
Actually, the first pod was recorded here in your living room.
What?
Yeah.
That's right. It was on the folding table.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. The very first pod was recorded here after we did a cookout thing.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah.
We did two episodes, and they were pretty hairy.
Yeah. We have not come very far, but we've definitely
moved
some.
The fact that we've done this so far for like 7 months now, I think is... And we've only missed 1 week in 7 months.
That's
pretty damn impressive.
I mean, this is episode 30.
This is
so
30.
Actually, it does make sense that for episode 30, we are interviewing the creator and the mind behind... Damn art majors.
He's just saying that because I said all those nice things in the intro in the last episode.
I wouldn't have said that shit about him.
It's because you're an asshole, and that's why you didn't get those nice things said about you.
Also, I didn't get fist stuck up a shark's ass.
It's not funny.
So yeah, there you go. Does that suffice as an interview?
That's a pretty good interview.
Yeah.
Oh, favorite movie to watch on a rainy day in the middle of the day? It's a very specific thing.
I don't even know
the answer. High Fidelity.
All right.
Is that the movie with John Cusack?
Yeah. No. If you ever read the book by Nick Hornby, especially for people of our age and this lot in life and various relationships, it hits home. High Fidelity.
Well, folks, I think this interview hit home. And from the three of us to the many of you, we thank you. The next one will be better.